Great. Welcome, everyone. People coming in now, thank you very much for joining. We'll obviously, yeah, give a 1 or 2 minutes just at the start whilst we let people join. Iris, if you want to go to the next slide. The usual kind of house rules. Thanks everyone for joining. We're looking forward to a good discussion. But please keep your microphone muted when you're not speaking. And then, as you already see, this session's being recorded. Maybe shared with registered participants afterwards. Yeah, thanks everyone. It's I know there's people joining from quite a range of time zones. Hope everyone's having a lovely morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you're joining from. Well, if you go on to the next agenda slide, Iris. Thanks. So just briefly waiting for the people to join. But the plan for today, I think first of all, just very, very glad. There's been a lot of interest in registrations. So thanks to those that are joining. The community is really key to the work we're doing as part of the AIforEducation.org, and it's really great to get everyone together for another event. We've had a lot of signups from a lot of range of countries and roles, and thanks for some of the comments as well that have already been put on the registration form. It's been really, really interesting to see. So the way the session is going to work, our CEO, Paul Atherton, is going to briefly recap some of the work so far on AI education benchmarks. Then I'm going to introduce and highlight some potential next directions for this work that we've been looking at, which we're glad to be working on, being funded by FCDO and EdTech Hub's AI Observatory. So we're glad to be taking that forward with them. And we want to spend the most of the time hearing from you. So we'll be doing a breakout groups discussion, and you can already see some of the questions there that we'll have kind of, if you keep them in mind as you're listening to this first bit, we really want to hear, what are you most interested in? Where do you think the most promise is in some of these directions that we're looking at? And do you have any sources that can help? And then we'll feedback to the group and wrap up in the main room. To get started, I'll hand over to Paul to take us forward on a quick recap of what we've been working on so far.
Cool. Thank you, Ali, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Please feel free to introduce yourself in the meeting chat. Quite often in these events, the conversations can be really useful as well. So feel free to just say who you are, what you've been doing in this space. Just to kind of give some headline framing on AIforEducation.org, basically we were founded about 18 months ago, coming out of some work at Fab Inc. On trying to make sure that children in low and low middle income countries don't get left behind as AI tools are kind of hit and are created. One of the key things here is we hear a lot of people saying, AI, ChatGPT is great for this, it's great for that. But until we have kind of objective ways of measuring it, we're essentially flying in the dark. So one of the key things we've been trying to do in the initiative is come up with these kind of tests and ways of understanding if these solutions are actually good for our use cases in the context which we are working in and trying to, you know, support the teachers and learners in low and low middle income countries. So some of this is we've been trying to just explain to people what AI benchmarks actually are. And the best way to think of them is it's essentially a test for AI models. So we take the foundational models, so GPT-4o or Gemini, and we give them a series of tests. These tests could be multiple choice tests, or they could be scenario tests. It could be, and there's a number of different ways to kind of implement this. But the kind of core way of thinking about it is just in the same way we would do with humans and children. If we want to know if they have the knowledge or the ability to do something, we set out, you know, what we want them to do and a scoring system, and we run it. So this assesses the specific skills in a standardized way. And it means, importantly, we can compare. And when we say we can compare, we mean people that are buying and using the products can go on and see which is best for their use case. But crucially, developers can also see what the best, most cost-effective model for their current product is as well. One thing to say is this is just one small part of a quality assurance framework. So this is a kind of testing of AI models in the lab, not in the wild, and we still need all the pieces which we've been talking about for the last, well, you know, many years in terms of how do we measure quality of education outcomes and edtech products. As I say, these are useful, one, because it gives developers a target to measure against. We find that once a benchmark receives kind of common usage, then developers, big and small, try to improve their models on this. If we want education models to be really good for foundational literacy and numeracy, we need ways of measuring this, and that's something we've been thinking a lot on. And second, it does empower users. So find out more. We've written a few things on here, but if you go onto the website / about AI benchmarks as well. Next slide, please. So one of the things we have been working on over the last few months is what we call the pedagogical benchmark. So this came out of discussions where we realized that even though there's a lot of people talking about can AI models sit exams, no one was thinking about, well, can AI models teach children or whoever to pass exams. And what this comes down to is pedagogy. We focused on pedagogical knowledge in the first instance and built this off some teaching exams which were sat in Chile, and Amy and the team did a great job in terms of filtering these questions, many questions. We ended up with 1,000, and then in the back end we built a load of infrastructure to be able to run these models and test all the new models as they come out. And anyone that's following this space will know that that is a ridiculous amount. So again, if you go onto the website, we can now say, well, actually, if we give a teaching exam to AI models, the best current leader might be O1 model, which is, you know, very, very expensive. But as soon as we adjust for price, then you'll see the DeepSeek, the Chinese models coming in very competitive, and Gemini Flash and LearnLM, which are the Google models, coming in very competitive as well. So this enables us to have a solid conversation on the quality on this specific kind of task. Next slide, please. The other thing we've been working on is expanding this as well in a number of different ways. So last week, and this is hot off the press, thank you to Maxime for running this all on a Friday night. But we've been looking at specific subsets of this on special educational needs pedagogy. And again, we see that we have a range of scores across the model. So this enables us to say, well, if someone's coming and using GPT-4 or Mini, we know that they're getting 70% on send performance. Is that good enough for a use case, or do we want to use O1 Mini, which is getting 71 at a higher price? Probably not. Gemini Flash is up there at 75. It enables these kind of conversations on specific topics like special educational needs. Next slide, please. The other thing we've been looking at is, and Ali will talk through a bit more in terms of like some of the specifics and where we're going to take this forward, and we would love your feedback, is when you start measuring these things, you realize that there's a big jagged edge in terms of AI. So a few months ago, we heard that a model from Google was scoring 90% in the maths Olympiad, which is unbelievable. The questions are very, very hard, and these AI models were getting 90%, which is further on beyond the realms of what we thought possible last year. But then when we tested it on questions from grade one mathematics or grades one, two, and three, very early foundational maths, we realized that the models are pretty average at best. So GPT-4o, which is the model which you'll access if you just go on to ChatGPT as a default, actually gets one in three questions. And we put in this kind of gray square. So, how many more gray squares are there than white? This is really easy for humans to answer. Small children can generally get this right. AI models can't. So one of the big questions here is, how are we going to solve this? So how do we do the creating training data to improve this for a use case, which is super, super important to us? So I know I'm just going to stop there because that's a bit of a headline, practical examples of what we're doing. I'm going to pass back to Ali, who will talk you through kind of the next steps and where we're thinking about taking this. And it'd be great to hear anybody's suggestions or comments. But thank you very much. Over to you, Ali.
Great, thanks, Paul. So yeah, as Paul kind of alluded to there, there's a wide range of directions that we can take this AI benchmarking work. And we've been doing, as well as some of the things Paul just showed, we've also been doing some thinking in the background, in terms of, yeah, which directions do we want to go into? And some of the bits that are informing this thinking is really thinking about what the current AI products and use cases are in low and middle income countries. Our great colleague Venu has been doing some work, and the team have been updating the product tracker that's also on the AI for Education website. And so we've been able to use that to look at what are the key use cases that are coming, that we're seeing on the ground across sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. And we've also been trying to keep this real interest in foundational literacy and numeracy. And as people know, the learning crisis, how can we, yeah, really narrow in on some of these core parts of how teaching and learning happens for foundational and early grades. There's a couple of supportive outputs on these aspects that we'll also be sharing in the coming out soon. So go to the next slide, please. And so with that, what that meant was we developed a long list of options, and then we tried to work through, so which of these do we think are the most promising to take forward? And some of the criteria here, as you can see, thinking some of the points we just mentioned. One, is this a really important skill for foundational literacy and numeracy? Secondly, is this a common and important AI use case? Is this thing where AI is already being used? Is this an area where AI can help teachers and learning? And then these other criteria here of value added. So, do benchmarks already exist in this? If so, we don't need to put in the work. We can also just show, show some other people's work. We can also direct people to that. And an important question here is, on the value add, we're also saying, like, working with other people, do we know if other people are already working on this, even if something's not out? So we've also been in discussions and to find out what other people are working on. There's a point here on AI ability. So can AI already do this well? And here for benchmarks, it's quite important that we're trying to focus on things that AI doesn't do well, and so that we can show, as Paul said, show where for the visual maths, for example, show that they're not performing well on this, and it can drive improvement amongst developers once we show this. And there was an interesting comment in the registration from one of the participants asking about like how do benchmarks stand the test of time. And you can see, yeah, once you make a benchmark at the beginning, it might be hard for AI models. As you see, we're seeing a lot of progress over the time. So over the course of kind of 1 or 2 years, you can really help drive improvements by showing where these weaknesses are. And I think as a bit of a scale, you can see the ChatGPT 3.5 that kind of kickstarted the interest in LLMs scores around 52%, I think, on our pedagogy benchmark. But now you can see some of the more recent models already coming in at like 85%. So there's also different ways that you can build benchmarks without an upper limit. They don't have to be multiple choice and 100% is the max. There are, yeah, more innovative ways that we can also bring in to try and think about kind of future-proofing benchmarks in going forwards as well. And then lastly, yeah, looking at how feasible we might want to build. It might be an important use case, but yeah, what are the steps? What are the data? What's the resources that we might need to build a benchmark here? So taking this thinking into consideration, we have a short list. And you can see, I've shared a pre-read beforehand, which also gives a bit more detail in how we went from this long list to this short list. On the next slide, I'm going to talk through these shortlisted ideas in turn, but you can see some of them are, we're already kind of progressing some quick wins in the meantime. You see, we're already working on the special educational needs and visual maths in tandem with seeing how we could take this forward in the future. Great, thanks, Iris, if you put the first one up. So yeah, going to go through these kind of one by one in turn. First one here in terms of early grade content creation. And here, basically we're trying to think about how well the outputs can build on existing learning that children know. So using the words and sound that they've already learned, focusing on the kind of current aspect that the teacher wants them to be learning and avoiding using words or sounds that children haven't learned yet. And this is a really important concept in foundational literacy in particular here. But yeah, making sure that you're building on existing learning is an important aspect for educational edtech and educational models. We're talking about the graphemes is the word there. So basically kind of the part of the words a phoneme is the smallest part of the sound that makes up a word. The grapheme is when that's written down. I think if we've got kind of a mix of people here, you can also think about, if you're a data scientist side, the token that makes up an AI model is also very similar to the grapheme that a teacher might understand. So I think that's our colleague put it quite nicely as a way of understanding there. But there's a software in this area that's already being used to help create materials. So one way that we're thinking to take this forward is how can we use that to then help us measure the performance of generated materials by AI. So that's really focusing in on some of the early grade steps that will be needed by AI models. But if you go to the next idea. Thanks. Another part of a key part of learning is kind of error correction, and the common misconceptions. So not just a case of correcting a mistake, but trying to understand why a child has made the mistake and what led them to it, and where you can steer them to improve that in the future. So here we're looking at how can we how can we measure how well does AI know, is able to recognize these misconceptions that a child has made when it's, if they get a question wrong. And saying here, there's already discussing Oak National Academies are developing a misconception data set, which could help us, we could use that going forwards. But also we want to look into where can we get any low and middle income specific sources. So if you know examples of student working and common student mistakes, this will be useful in this area. You get the next one, Iris. The early grades visual maths, Paul has already kind of introduced, we've already got a leaderboards here, so measuring the ability to correctly interpret visual math questions. And yeah, again, at early grades, much of the learning in maths is done through visual pictures and trying to understand that before you get into the more abstract as students develop their math skills. So again here, we have accessed a source of questions from a higher income country context, but we do see some differences when we look at this, and we think from some of the foundational resources we've seen in low and middle income countries. So I think we're starting to look at where can we access some sources to really tailor this benchmark to the real resources that people are using on the ground in low and middle income countries. And then another idea that we're looking at here is in terms of the digitization of early grade materials, how well can an AI model kind of read and preserve the information that's in these early grade materials when they're being digitized. Now, this is a particularly important aspect because it's in early grades, a lot of the materials, it's not about just the words and the text. It's really, there's often quite few words in a child's storybook or learning textbook for early grade materials, but it's the layout and the choice of those words is really key, and how they interact with images as well. So it's not just kind of not just the text, but how this is all preserved on the page. We want to be able to measure how well, once you're scanning and digitizing that with the support of AI, how well it can preserve that information. Thanks. So the next one, here we're thinking about contextualization and how well do AI models differentiate their outputs if you want to tailor something to children in Sierra Leone, for example, compared to some of the maybe the UK resources, if you're trying to adapt that for another country, or across sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, how well are AI models able to differentiate these outputs? And here we've been thinking in terms of it's particularly some of the vocabulary parts, so things like names, geographies, foods, sports, things to do, how well can we how well are our models able to adapt those to the interests and be able to engage children from the countries using vocabulary and real life situations to them. So that's some of the areas we've been thinking, but we'd be really glad to hear as well from the community kind of what aspects of contextualization are most important to you. The next one we're thinking, it also comes under this kind of theme of contextualization, but we're looking particularly into the sort of the language used in the prompts and in how this gets translated. But also, it's not just in terms of how well the models are at translating; it's also the different resources that they are trained on, and do we get a different output? Would it pull from its training? If you're using you put a question in Swahili, will it draw more from Swahili resources that are in its training materials and tailor the outputs based on the language you use? So there's some areas that we're looking at here on how we can test if you ask kind of similar question in different languages, how much the outputs vary based on that, the language you use and the input. And yeah, lastly, Paul already mentioned here, we already started doing a bit of work in this, bringing this special educational needs and disability specific pedagogy. Here we were able to use the Chilean teacher training questions that we'd already used for the original pedagogy benchmark. And we can see, yeah, that there are, although there's a correlation in results, we do see that the performance on the special educational needs questions are kind of a step lower than the performance we're seeing on pedagogy in general. So I think that kind of shows that this is an interesting and valuable area to look into more. And yeah, we'd let the we have a kind of a small subset of questions at the moment from that Chile source. So we'd love to be able to bring in other teacher training questions focused on special educational needs and disabilities. So again, this was something we would great to hear from you if you know these resources. But yeah, those are some of the next directions that we've been thinking about, and we'll go to towards some breakout rooms now. So we're going to put you all into groups. We really want to hear from you on what you think kind of looks most promising in this direction. And there's some questions here to kind of prompt some of the discussion. You can kind of take an abstract thought of, okay, what are the products you're using, you're developing? What do you most want to know about how good the outputs are? And then where do you see the most promising directions for this work? And yeah, do you know any of the relevant sources that might be helpful for us to take forwards and for the community that we can share? And we're talking about sources here. We're thinking about, examples of student work, textbooks, sort of lists of common misconceptions, like any of the different challenges that we've been talking about in terms of foundational learning, some of the resources that are tailored to low and middle income countries to solving those. They'll also be helpful to bring into AI benchmarks. So if you go to the next slide, we're about to send you across. Just it should move you automatically into the breakout room. But if you have any trouble, do just rejoin the call and we can help in the main room. Please put videos on if your bandwidth allows, and try and keep introductions short. I want to be able to get as much discussion on, hear your inputs as much as possible. And we'll try and have someone from our AI for Education team in each group. But please do dive into the discussion questions. And we'll also be able to send those to each group to help shape the discussion. So yeah, thanks everyone. We'll send you now into the breakout rooms. And yeah, hope you have a great discussion, and we'll hear back from you in the main room after. Great, welcome back everyone. I hope you all had interesting discussions. I'll want to spend quick a few minutes now, kind of people feeding back. What were the main topics of discussion in your rooms? I think one of the interesting ones in the room I was in was kind of around. It comes under the sort of pedagogical practice part of how well can an AI model, instead of just correcting a student and telling them the straight answer, how well, if they give an incorrect answer, telling them this is the correct answer, how well can it guide them and to learn it, to learn and understand where they went wrong, and how well can, this kind of fits into that wider worry about AI of that it might be impinging on people's skills and just giving them something that they can use, rather than how can it still support the development of skills. That came up with a couple of people in my room, but I'd love to hear if people want to put their hand up to say what was the discussion in your rooms. Great, David. Please. Come in.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. I think it was like we're looking at what the AI can do and what we expect from the AI in terms of teaching numerical literacy or something. For us, critically, I think the key point is, how the AI can be able to be responsive to local content is very important in terms of the African, the way I see it from my angle, how it's robust enough to see the local curriculums and respond to that. If you look at it, the current LLMs are much too sensitive to Western grade profiling. They kind of, understand things in terms of K-12. If you say K-12, it understands. But if you say primary 6, it doesn't understand. And so it becomes a challenge for it to be able to break down the numerical questions, response to each grade profile at this level. So the K-6 systems of America, K-12 system is not the African system. And so the numerical quality you get out of it becomes more subjective. Again, I think the third part of it will be the LLMs itself, the input process doesn't allow for creativity much in terms of numerical questions from the students. How do I mean? For example, it's like you have to just scan your problems, the child problems, feed it into the system. For me, that is itself a problem itself. How can it not be that a student can just draw at that level, a young child can just draw something, and let the LLM respond? So if you look at it, it's more like the LLM is adaptable for higher minded people at that level. So it's not much into these smaller children things at this point. So, but if you look at trying to use it for higher mathematical calculations and breakdown, it does very well. It does very well in unraveling complex questions. But when it comes to those points, I don't think it's adaptable enough and responsible enough, because if it is, then there should be a channel where you can just put a drawing, a child can draw as input into the process itself. Then I think again, the other point I will say is, I expect like the LLMs to respond to the student level, so I can be able to grade and respond and give feedback based on the student ability on that subject. If the student ability is not good, it responds and comes down, tailor it not like more difficult questions and things like that.
Thanks, David. I think I lost you there. That was really interesting points. I think the first was kind of coming out of the contextualization, and then kind of how can we make the, I guess, kind of sort of a digitization challenge of understanding student working, and then feeding into the other part of how to then guide the answers afterwards. Thanks, David. Amy, do you want to discuss from your room?
Yeah, I can share from our room. I felt like we had a couple of interesting ideas for the benchmarks. I think one of them that particularly resonated with people was this idea of like assessing like contextualization and language, and people were particularly talking about the need to really like assess like particular language groups in countries. Like it might not be okay to just assess whether a language model can do well in Sudan, say, like we need to look at kind of regional dialects and really kind of focus in on groups a little bit more to understand some of those minority languages. And then the second one that was brought up was about the fact that lots of AI at the minute is really focused on personalization. And so it might be useful to have some assessments of like, is there a good match between the task and like the student level, like when the platform, say, is trying to do an adaptive platform where it matches the task with where the students are. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Amy. It's really interesting. I think with time, we're not going to be able to get to every group, but I think there was an AI for Education person in each one, so we will feed all this back. But we'll also go now to Robin. Do you want to talk about your group?
Yeah, I can do a quick summary. The first point, I think that we had a few people in our group echo what has been written in the chat, that I think there's a feeling that human verification is still necessary, particularly on any content that's going to go to students, and that like we don't think it's there yet. So then our discussion was, you know, when you do that human verification, what is being done, you know, so that we can learn from that to try to operationalize it as a benchmark. We also echoed what Amy just said. We talked a lot about personalized learning as a major interest point, and, you know, possible target for benchmarks. And we also talked about lesson plans and other generative outputs, and a little bit about metrics and so on. So yeah, I think those are the main three points I wanted to bring here.
Great, thanks, Robin. Anyone else want to feedback any points from their group? Maxime, yeah, please.
Yeah, maybe I can go for it quickly. So yeah, I think the two main points, but I think some of those thinking has been like said, like it was maybe about like, how do we make sure that the outputs are reliable and like accurate and up to date? Because I think one of the person like was saying that sometimes the information is not like we kind of know if the thing is really like accurate. And there was something about like contextualization, like how can we make sure that the content being generated can be localized? And I think one of the promising direction that I liked was like, there was a comment about like, even though we know that the output is like accurate and good, the person was saying that even when the output was presented to the minister or the teacher, like they were not like very confident about the quality, just because they were lacking, they were not like in the driver's seat. So they were, even though it was good, they didn't have the confidence. So I think it was pretty interesting to have this balance between like the confidence and the actual accuracy.
Yeah, that came up in our discussion as well about down to the teacher level of how can they be confident of using these tools. And I think benchmarks can be a key part within that. How can we clearly show how well AI systems and tools are at at solving some of these challenges. So Iris, if you can just put the screen back on, I think my colleagues just put in the chats. I'm not sure if anyone's going to be at the CIES conference in Chicago next week, but I'll also be there, and there's two presentations from AIforEducation.org. So I'd love to follow up with anyone if you are going to be in Chicago. I think really just want to say thank you very much to everyone for joining. It's been great to get people together and hear some of these inputs on what's important to the community. Basically, please do reach out by email for any further comments or information sources that you think would be useful. And we'd love to keep this dialogue going. So thank you very much, everyone. I found it really interesting discussion, and really glad that you're all able to join us today.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. That was very informative.
Yeah, thank you very much for this amazing session. Thank you. So thanks a lot.
Great. I really appreciate you all joining.
Yeah.